ॐ सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा दिशावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. May the Supreme Lord protect both the teacher and the student, and may He cherish and nourish us both. May we work with full energy, may our study be perfect, and may it give us good results. May we never feel ill will towards others. So yesterday we were looking a little bit at the qualities of the demoniac, and in today's verses, verses 10 to 18, Krishna will go into quite some detail about the mindset, behavior, and activity of the demoniac person. Let's begin by reading verse 10. Here Krishna says, taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. Now, just as a matter of interest, what I'd like to do is for us to turn to back to the second chapter. I know it's a long time since we had a look at that, but let's have a look at the second chapter, verses 62-63. If you remember, these are the full down sequence given by Krishna, so we can understand what's happening when we're finding ourselves in a little bit of bewilderment or trouble. So 62-63, Krishna says, while contemplating the objects of the senses, we have some trouble? Chapter 2. Yeah. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops. And from lust, anger arises. From anger, complete delusion arises. And from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. So let's have a look at verse 10 again. Here Krishna is saying, taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. So what can we understand from juxtaposing these two sets of verses, or these by putting these two sets of verses together? What can we understand about the nature, natural situation of the demoniac? Right? So what does that mean? What's the result of that? Yeah, that's good. So they're in a constant fallen state. There's nothing, there's no highs for them. They're in a constant fallen state. And also, because they're in a constant state of bewilderment, they can be called less intelligent. They're controlled by their desires. So sometimes you see animals which have a particular desire they very much want to fulfill, a monkey or a dog, like that. And when they're preoccupied with that desire, they lose all intelligence. They lose all perspective. And they do quite ridiculous things to achieve their goal. So we can see that that's also here in the mindset of the demoniac. And if you remember, in chapter 7, in verse 23, that Krishna called the demigod worshipper alpamedasam, having less intelligence, for the same reason. So lusty to fulfill his desires, that he makes unwise decisions. So this is actually the natural condition of the demoniac. And there is a natural link between being lusty and being less intelligent. This is more or less being explained in this verse. Krishna is saying, kamam asritya. They've taken shelter of lust. And dambha manam adanvittaha. They're absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige. So Prabhupada really gives a very wonderful understanding of the implications of these two things in a lecture he gave some time back. It was in Hawaii. In 75. I'd like to share this with you. So what he says here It's quite long, but I found it very instructive, frighteningly instructive, actually. So I thought to share it with you. What does Alpa Buddhaya, less intelligent, mean? Why he has become less intelligent? That is described in this verse, Kamam Ashutya. His basic principle of life is lusty desire, Ashutya. He has taken shelter of principally the lusty desire. Our constitutional position is that we have to take shelter of somebody, just like the dog. The dog, if he has no shelter, a good master, he has no position. He's a street dog. He has no food, he has no shelter, he is lean and thin and doesn't know where to go, in this way. So the constitutional position of the dog is that it must have a good master. Then he is happy. He's happy. Otherwise, he's not happy. Anatta, without master. Otherwise, street dog, sometimes killed by the municipality. Similarly, our position is dog. We must understand it. We cannot live independently. It is not possible. The demoniac persons have no shelter. Therefore, they are always miserable. Then he goes on to say, Dambha mana maranvittaha. These asuras, these demons, the rascals, they are simply falsely proud. Just like with the same example, the dog. The dog is very proud, barking, yo, yo, yo. He does not know, I am chained. And Prabhupada laughs. He's such a fool. As soon as the master comes and says, come on, he comes. So master is Maya. You rascal, come here. But yes, yes. We are chained, and at any time, Maya can pull on the chain and let us know who is the real master. As soon as Maya pulls on the chain, we must follow. They have no reason to be proud. Still, they are proud. So Krishna has given you the sunlight so that you can see. Bhagavad Gita 15. Krishna has given you nice breeze. Therefore, you can live. You can breathe. Everyone is dependent. We are dependent. Without light, without air, without rain and water, how can we live? So we are completely dependent. But on account of false prestige, less intelligence, we are thinking we are free. I am God. I can do anything. This is demoniac attitude. Completely being dependent, as soon as death comes, immediately we have to leave the situation. Sir, let me stay just for 1 hour more. No, not even a minute. This is our position. But the demons, being instead of taking shelter of Krishna, instead of taking shelter of Krishna's bona fide servant, they take shelter of lust, their lusty desires and pride and false prestige. So when Prabhupada says things, he has a habit of making things very black and white, very, very clear, that our position is one of complete dependence. We're tatastha shakti, marginal energy. We can't live without shelter. We have to have it. So then we have to make a choice, which shelter we want. So the people we're talking about in the 16th chapter, I don't think it includes any of us, the people we're talking about in the 16th chapter, they've chosen the material energy as their shelter. And especially, they've taken shelter of their mind. They take their minds very, very seriously. So let's have a look at verses 11 and 12. Krishna is continuing on with describing the mindset of these people. They believe that to gratify the senses is a prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. So here Krishna is exposing the foolishness of these people. He is using the word pasa here in the second verse, second word of the second verse. So pasa, it's another meaning word for rope. And in context, he's saying, asapasha shatir. So this means that not only they are entangled by the ropes of their unlimited desires, but that same rope will strangle them, eventually will strangle them. It's very, very heavy. And the problem, as I just said, is because they take their minds so seriously. And by identifying with their minds, they're not only degrading themselves, but they're putting themselves in a constant state of anxiety. So this anxiety You know, he's a very close brother of fear. And the defending principle is our reaction to that fear, of that anxiety, isn't it? So this fear and anxiety are very, very close. And I thought to read you a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which talks about this problem of fear. It's from the Purport, Prabhupada's Purport, to Canto 1, chapter 12, verse 28. Similarly, we in this material existence are always fearful. This fearfulness is called anxiety. Everyone in the material life, in all species and varieties of life, is full of anxieties, either by breaking or without breaking the laws of nature. Liberation or mukti means getting relief from these constant anxieties. This is possible only when the anxiety is changed to the devotional service of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us a chance to change the quality of anxiety from matter to spirit. This is done in the association of a learned philosopher like the self-realized Sukadeva Goswami, the great son of Sri Vyasadeva. So at this point, I was thinking, I don't know why, when I was preparing these verses, I kept reflecting back on chapter 2. So I thought to share that mood with you. So if we look at these verses and then take a look at 270, anybody remember that verse? It was one we spent quite some time on. It's a very powerful verse. So in 270, Krishna is saying that a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So we can understand that this is the way to deal with our desires. It's a complete opposite of what those of demoniac nature feel is the proper thing. And here Krishna is making, you know, in the verses from the 16th chapter, Krishna and Prabhupada are making it very clear that the result of uncontrolled desiring is fear and anxiety, constant state of fear and anxiety. There's something very interesting that Prabhupada said about the difference between material anxiety and spiritual anxiety in a lecture he gave in Hawaii in 75 that I thought to share with you also.
Just like in our, this Krishna consciousness movement, the movement, all the activities, they are not material, they're all spiritual. But still, because it is being enacted in the material world, we have also so much anxiety because we are in the material world, although that anxiety is also bhakti. That is nothing else. That is not material. When we are anxious how to protect a property, how to push on this movement, how people will take it, what line of action shall we take, this is also anxiety. But that anxiety is for Krishna. Therefore, it is bhakti. Even in Vrindavan, there is anxiety. Radharani is in anxiety. What is her anxiety? That Krishna is not here. How Krishna will come. The gopis are also in anxiety. What was their anxiety? Gopis are so in anxiety that about them it is said that when Krishna used to go to the forest for tending the cows, so gopis were thinking at home that Krishna's feet is so soft that we hesitate to take his feet on our breast, but he is now walking in the forest, and there are so many stones and pricks, and they are giving pain to Krishna's lotus feet. And thinking like this, they fainted. This is gopi. Krishna is out of the village, and they are at home, and they are thinking of Krishna, and they fainted. This is also anxiety. So much anxiety they fainted, but that is for Krishna. Therefore, gopis are exalted. Ramya kachit upasana vrajavadu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he recommends, quote, there is no better type of worshipping Krishna than it was planned by the gopis. So there is also anxiety. So anxiety is spiritual anxiety and material anxiety. Spiritual anxiety means you are advancing in spiritual life, and material anxiety means you are going downhill. Maya labdha means I have got it. Imam Prapche Manoratham. Again, I shall get tomorrow so much money, and my bank balance will increase to such and such strength. idam asti. I got so much, and so much will be added, and balance will increase. Idam me bhavishyati punarthanam. In this way, I will increase the amount of my wealth more and more. The materialist is thinking how to increase his money. What does the devotee want to increase? How much love I have increased for Krishna. That is bhakti, bhakta. But where there is no bhakti, they are thinking of this material increase. Asso maya hata. Thinking others are enemy. Actually, in the higher status of life, a devotee does not think anyone is enemy. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Sama. He knows that, quote, nobody can become my enemy unless Krishna desires it. So why shall I think of him as my enemy? Krishna has desired him to act as my enemy just to correct me, just to make me more advanced in spiritual life. So why shall I take any action upon him as enemy?
So this last little section that Ananda read is an introduction to verses 13 to 15, where Krishna is explaining how the demoniac think when they get their money illegally. They go to great endeavors to get the money, but then how do they think once they get it? Here we're talking protection. They're trying to protect what they feel is theirs. So let's have a read of 13 to 15. Demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So it's very, very clear from these verses that this person, he thinks he is the supreme controller, he is the supreme enjoyer, and that anything that has come his way in the way of good things is certainly by his own endeavor. There's no luck involved, he doesn't know what karma is. It's just by my endeavor I have achieved. He's 100% confident that he's in control. And if anybody gets in the way, oh, that's their problem. They better get out the way or I'll get them out of the way. Isn't it? So it's a very, very harsh. Yesterday we were talking about the exploitative, manipulative mentality of the demoniac nature. So here we can see how they will act, how that exploitative mentality will manifest in their behavior. So Prabhupada has some further insights about this, but I think we'll save them to a little bit later. So you can see that there's a world of difference between the mentality of the demon and the mentality of the devotee. Example that comes to my mind very readily is the beating of Haridas Thakur in the marketplaces, that these Muslim guards were like ruthlessly beating him. And they had no concern for any pain that they were causing him. It was just like they were dealing with dead matter as far as they were concerned. They were just doing their job. And he was so amazing that even though, you know, usually after two or three marketplaces, people would breathe their last, they'd be finished. But he was, because he was absorbed in Mahaprabhu and Nam, he just wasn't facing that difficulty. And what he was doing was praying to Krishna, please, don't take offense at their behavior. You know, they're in ignorance, they don't know what they're doing. You know, don't take offense. And then when the guards that were beating him became very, very concerned, and, you know, why aren't you dying? You've got to die. If you don't die, we'll have to die. The king will kill us. You know, so then he feigned death so that they would be relieved of their anxiety and be able to report back to the king that their job was done. It's completely, you know, like it's inconceivable difference between the two mentalities, where the devotee is just, to me at least, it proves to me I have a long way to go, but he completely submissive to the will of the Lord, even if it means being beaten in 22 marketplaces. Of course, this was his reaction to his stealing Krishna's cows and calves in Vrindavan Leela. But still, you know, to be able to bear like that is quite phenomenal. So it's very clear from these verses that the Devaniyak are very, very proud of their achievements. But then it's really interesting that Krishna, in the 16th chapter, he talks about the factual achievement. They're thinking the money and, you know, the facilities and everything, that's the achievement of their activity. But in the 16th verse, Krishna talks about the reality, what is factually the result they're getting for the way they're behaving and what they're doing. So here he's saying, thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. So here they are, thinking they're the lords and masters of all they survey, but the reality is that they're falling down into hell. So then this purport by Prabhupada is quite amazing. So I thought we'd read quite an amount of that. We'll start from the beginning. The demoniac man knows no limit to his desire to acquire money. That is unlimited. He thinks only of how much assessment he has just now and schemes to engage that stock of wealth further and further. For that reason, he does not hesitate to act in any sinful way and so deals in the black market for illegal gratification. He is enamored by the possessions he has already, such as land, family, house, and bank balance, and he is always planning to improve them. He believes in his own strength, and he does not know that whatever he is gaining is due to his past good deeds. He is given an opportunity to accumulate such things, but he has no conception of past causes. He simply thinks that all his mass of wealth is due to his own endeavor. A demoniac person believes in the strength of his personal work, not in the law of karma. According to the law of karma, a man takes his birth in a high family or becomes rich or very well educated or very beautiful because of good work in the past. The demoniac thinks that all these things are accidental and due to the strength of one's personal ability. They do not sense any arrangement behind all the varieties of people, beauty, and education. Anyone who comes into competition with such a demoniac man is his enemy. There are many demoniac people, and each is enemy to the others. This enmity becomes more and more deep between persons, then between families, then between societies, and at last between nations. Therefore, there is constant strife, war, and enmity all over the world. Each demoniac person thinks that he can live at the sacrifice of all others. Generally, a demoniac person thinks of himself as a supreme god, and a demoniac preacher tells his followers, "Why are you seeking God elsewhere? You are all yourselves God. Whatever you like, you can do. Don't believe in God. Throw away God. God is dead." These are the demoniac's preachings. So it reminds me of a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the first verse of Shikshastika, where he explains, I think I've explained this to you before, but it's relevant at this point in time also, that this forest fire of material existence, that in the forest, sometimes, although there's no one in the forest, there's a forest fire. And it's because bamboos are rubbing in the wind, they're rubbing against each other. And that friction will make for fire. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that in the same way, because all of us have come here with the idea that we're supreme, we're the enjoyer, we're the controller, and we've come here with a specific purpose, we want to fulfill our desires. So we can't have a place where there are so many gods, all with independent desires. It just doesn't work. So what happens is that all those desires are like bamboo rods rubbing against each other. And the friction, the fighting of whose desire is going to be supreme, it will ignite and it will create destruction, as we've seen happening on the planet recently. I find this interesting also in relation to what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Prabhupada on the banks of Radhakund. where Prabhupada was lamenting that he couldn't be part of the mat. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur revealed his mind to him that when I leave, there will be fire in the mat. So when we're talking about this kind of fire, it's a clash of the different egos where perspective of the guru's desires, the guru's teachings are lost, and it becomes an individual struggle for supremacy. My idea is right, my understanding is right, rather than keeping to simply and chastely to the teachings of the guru. So these are quite some people, these people here. In verse 17, Krishna really exposes the madness of the demoniac mindset and the whimsical nature of their behavior. Here he says, self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules or regulations. So for some reason, when I was reading this verse, I remembered something, a Kali Yuga type yagya that was performed quite some years ago now. It was performed by John Lennon and his high priestess, Yoko Ono. I think they called it a love-in. It was many years ago now, I think. Yeah. So, and it attracted, because of his fame, it actually attracted international coverage. You know, they're spending a week in bed and it attracted international coverage. And I was interested to find that Prabhupada actually said something about that. So, you know, he's quite an amazing person. So I thought to share that with you. In England, I was guest in John Lennon's house. He had a photograph taken naked. He was a big man. He gave opinions to the newspaper reporter. People go there to take his opinion about some serious subject, and he speaks. But the man is so shameless that he's standing there naked. He's an important man because he's got money. Especially in the Western countries, this is very prominent. If you have got money, then you've got everything. Therefore, they are all after money only. That somehow or other, if I get money, then I get everything. I get respect, I get honor, I get everything. Get money, somehow or other, get money. So, it's interesting. It's, and it's very common. This is also mentioned quite strongly in the qualities of Kali Yuga that are given in the 12th canto. It talks about the same kind of thing. The potency of money to buy not only facility, but justice. You can decide what is truth if you have more money than the other person. So many things. So Prabhupada, in the same conversation, this is actually from a conversation, and in the same conversation, he speaks of the cheating guru. I thought to share that with you also. This is a conversation from New York in 76. Sorry, New Vrindavan in 76. And whatever they are thinking, it's all right, that's all. They're not going to hear from any authority. Whatever they think that's final, that's all. Why? Pushta Krishna, stabda, impudent. Prabhupada, no obedience to authority, impudent. And Pushta Krishna, dhanamana, Prabhupada, dhanamana, because they've got money. Whatever they think, that's all right. And their gurus also will say, yes, yes, it's all right. If the guru says it's not all right, then nobody will come to him. He has to say it's all right, because he's also after money and women. That's all. He does not have to come here to preach something. This is going on. Therefore, they come here in so many numbers, these cheating gurus. They have now taken a good field. And in America you go, you say any nonsense, and they'll accept and pay money. Dana means money. So if you've got money, then everyone will respect you, even guru. Personally, you may be less than dog, but because you've got money, people will respect you, is it not? So then we have these like puppy dog gurus situation. That's true. But you have to think of, we'll discuss this later. Hold that question because it's an interesting one. I'd like to explore that. That's a good question. Bring it up again when we finish the class. So let's have a look at verse 18, which is the final verse that we'll have a look at today. Here, Krishna is saying, bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against the real religion. So I wanted to read the whole purport of this. Perhaps, Abhidhut, you'd like to come out and do that, because Prabhupada is really making it very, very clear that these people are not only envious of others, but they're envious of Krishna, they're envious of the Shastra, they're envious of themselves. It's such a hellish, self-destroying circumstance. Is your health okay? You all right to read? Yeah, just the whole purport, 218, would be good.
Translation. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against the real religion. Report. A demoniac person, being always against God's supremacy, does not like to believe in the scriptures. He is envious of both the scriptures and the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is caused by his so-called prestige and his accumulation of wealth and strength. He does not know that in the present life, that the present life is a preparation for the next life. Not knowing this, he is actually envious of his own self, as well as of others. He commits violence on other bodies and on his own. He does not care for the supreme control of the personality of Godhead, because he has no knowledge. Being envious of the scriptures and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he puts forward false arguments against the existence of God and denies the scriptural authority. He thinks himself independent and powerful in every action. He thinks that since no one can equal him in strength, power and wealth, he can act in any way and no one can stop him. If he has an enemy who might check the advancement of his sensual activities, he makes plans to cut him down by his own power.
Quite nasty people. In the course of my preaching, I've made contact with families who externally look very, very cultured and very religious. But then as you come to know the workings of the family, it's exactly this. It's Marwari families, Gujarati families. And the cutthroat nature in them was quite shocking to me when I first came across it. There's an indication that Kali Yuga is well and truly on the rise in the form of these kind of activities. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in commenting on this verse, also makes it a point of saying that the demoniac are also envious of Krishna's devotees, and their envy takes the form of trying to impede their preaching, criticizing them, being unable to tolerate any good qualities or popularity or opulence as they have. And most of us who have in the preaching field would have very good experience of that. Would anyone like to share an experience of an exchange with a demon? Yeah. Is it just any other experiences? Abhidhut.
I saw them flying towards me in the corner of my eye. So I just moved and they just like
What was that? What were they? Huh? Plates.
Yeah.
Really?
Plates from the restaurant.
One thing that I found in the course of preaching is that quite often when these demoniac people approach you, because they're so outrageous and they think that, you know, they're fine, but their behavior is so outrageous that you can make a lot of friends on the side, people that watch. I remember one time I was distributing books, isn't it, Parvati? I remember one time I was distributing books outside the town hall in Brisbane. It was a very good area for book distribution because it's a social gathering place. And it was at night, and one person, he took a book, and I, you know, didn't think much of it. It was a coming back paperback, and he came back about 5-10 minutes later, and he completely crumpled the inside of the book, and he set it on fire and threw it at me, and I had, my arms were full of books. I really couldn't do much to protect myself, but you know, I just sort of managed to pick up the cover of the book, and there's a fountain there. I put it in the fountain to put the flame out, because it's Krishna's book. And then I just put it in my bag. I thought I'd deal with it later. And it was really funny because he was so obnoxious. He was such a horrible person. But just people watching the way I dealt with it, they're very interested in the books. They became very, very interested, you know, in the preaching. So even though they try so hard to be a disruption, quite often their attempts to be a disruption are actually strengthen our preaching and our credibility. Anyone else have other stories on that they'd like to share? Ananda? Amazing. Yeah, because for us to live in that environment would be hell, the equivalent of hell. That's true. Poverty. This is devotional service practiced in the mode of ignorance. Harsh. And like that.
I'm not willing to get too many donations and favors. But this kind of
instruction. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay, so Amrita had a question earlier. Would you like to raise? Oh, let's first see if there's any questions on the class, and like specifically in terms of content, and then we'll take a comment and a question. Any questions? Yeah.
I just had a comment for Bali's myself.
We're going to do that in a little while.
So, you know, and so yeah. It just seems to have that understanding.
That's true.
It's like hard to find it. No.
But there's a couple of things I'd say about it. One is that. What you're saying is a valuable point in terms of preaching to people, where you see that there are good qualities there and work on those. So that's a good point. But always keep in the back of your mind that when we're looking at good and bad qualities, whether they're actually good or bad, we have to look at the consciousness. We have to take a step back and look at the consciousness. So a lot of these books, for example, on they're called management books, but actually they're controllership books. These books... they talk about a lot of good qualities that you should have to manipulate your staff, right? So quite often you'll see that people, they will exhibit good qualities. You know, they're very equipoise in their dealings, they're very equipoise in their vision, and they're dealing with different employers like that. But it's with one purpose in mind, like the story we read yesterday of the jackal and the vulture. So they seem to be acting for the welfare of one and all. They seem to be very magnanimous. But in the back of their mind, they've got a plan, a me plan. And that's what they're working on. So always when we're looking and we're dealing with the materialists, we have to be aware of the mentality, the mindset behind what's coming out as external, their behavior and their actions. It's like you scratch a little deep. I notice it especially when preaching to Christians, born again, not the real ones, but the born again Christians. They're so sweet, love, you know, everything is love. But as soon as you say something they don't agree with, rah, you know. So what does it mean? It means that there's a superficiality there about their dealings, and it's for a purpose. So that duplicity is a sign of pride, and pride is a sign of ignorance. So I take your point, but be a little aware of, you know, how you should view, from what perspective you should view those qualities. Well, the other point, yeah. Well, that's the other point is that, you know, like one of the qualities of the Madhyam is, two of the qualities of the Madhyam are relevant here in the sense that those who are ignorant, you know, they may have demoniac mindset. The whole culture is like that, so they're obviously going to be a product of it, of the ideology. So they are like that, but they're pious in their ignorance. They're not really nasty people. They have, like, they've taken on the qualities, they do all the activities, but it's not really them. They're just in ignorance. So the Madhyam will be kind to such people. But then those who are have the same qualities and are envious, then we would avoid. So, you know, when dealing with relatives and things like that, of course there has to be compassion there. A special compassion, because it's by their mercy that we have this body, and with this body we're practicing Krishna consciousness. So we have to be a little bit sensitive. Yeah. Yeah. This is actually one of the bewildering things, is that usually those who are like big time, although there's not so many big time, but big time within Kali Yuga type demons, they're very expert at controlling the material energy. And so they will come across, it will be quite bewildering to deal with them. You know, they will have the influence, they will have the charisma. Like I heard that Prabhupada said... Yeah. Actually, that's a very important point, that we shouldn't be naive about the demoniac's power. That's a very good point. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
So, you know, so
But the swastika is the opposite of what it should be.
But sometimes these people are coming, you know, they have these kind of attractive abilities, and they're actually instruments, and they're coming from lower planets. I heard that Prabhupada said that about Mick Jagger, that he actually came from the lower planets to degrade Kali Yuga youth. Yeah, Yashoda. What's that? He also said that about the Rockefellers. Rakshasas, that's interesting. Yeah, so like they will have, because it's not a matter of the externals, the demon really knows how to use the material facility. That's his expertise. He thinks he's God. So he really does it big style. And there will be that incredible sense of culture, sometimes finesse, expertise. So it can be quite bewildering if you're not on ball. You know, have to have your wits about you. It's another good reason to have Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as a handbook in your daily life. Yeah. Amrit, you had some comment before? Anybody want to comment on that? Did everyone hear what Amrit said? Yeah, Krishna Priya. I think there has to be sort of a balance, because anyone who has any opulence of any kind, they've been given that opulence by Krishna. So there should be some, like if someone is in a position, Prabhupada would always respect that position. So that point is there. But also I think we have to, and I agree with your point, that because there is that, they have had that respect, and if we don't give them some respect, it would be seen as highly uncultured and improper. But at the same time, I think we could be a little bit more mature in the way we show our respect and more educative in our dealings with people. So I sort of feel that, especially in light of what Parvati was saying, that it gets back to something we were talking a lot about a couple of months ago, of the problem of Kanista culture, is where we're not really mature in our dealings with Krishna, each other, or his energy. So, the point you made about if we preach properly, Krishna consciously, then all facility will come. I think most people who have preached and tried to do it as Prabhupada instructed find that. But it just happens, things happen. You don't even go out of your way to support the project, but it sort of just somehow or other happens. Okay, so now we're going to swing this whole thing round. I'm going to give you 5 minutes for this little exercise. I want you to look quickly at today's verses and jot down three aspects of what you read that are still troubling you. I want you to put your name on it, on a piece of paper that you can hand up. I won't read your name, but after 5 minutes I want to collect those bits of paper, and then we'll see ways we can deal with those problems as devotees. So read quite quickly through those 10 verses. Yeah, you're dealing with in your own personality, in your own behavior, your own mindset. Just the three that you find most relevant to your situation now. Put your name on the paper, but I won't read your name out. I won't read your name out. No problem. Yeah, personally, not anything to do with, yeah, like what you're struggling with yourself. Yeah, just three. Any more, maybe a bit of a problem for us to deal with. It's always good to turn it inwards and have a look. Yeah, it's quite revealing. We've all got the same problems, pretty much. I guess it comes with being born into a demonic situation. Okay, so I find this a very interesting one. Thank you. We may go on with this tomorrow, because some of these thoughts are very real to us, and we have to deal with them. One that I'd like us to discuss is always being full of anxieties on account of taking
non-permanent as real. Like the fact that we, you know, so often are anxiety-ridden for different reasons. So anyone have any practical thoughts on how we can deal with that?
Yeah, well, this kind of little exercise as you're talking about, in essence what it's doing is it's putting you within a mode of goodness framework. You're sort of stepping back a little bit, thinking clearly a little bit, and putting it into perspective. So that's basically what you do if you're mode of goodness. When something comes out of the blue that creates anxiety for you, the first thing you'll do is step back. Step back and observe. And quite often you'll wait until Krishna reveals his next hand before you reveal yours. It means you have to have patience. And you can't be too much concerned with the externals, what people will think or whatever. But it works. Just to sort of have that sense of, you know, okay, let's see what Krishna does next. Yeah. So how do you feel would be good to deal with those feelings, those emotions? Anyone got any idea on that? Bettina's saying something very valuable, that even though we may with our intelligence be able to step back and put it into a philosophical light, still the feelings, the emotions are there, and they are very draining and they create disturbance. So how can we deal with them? But we're talking about solutions. Yeah. Yeah. But what kind of emotions are you talking about? Or what are the emotions that you mainly are talking about? Yeah. A very nice way of dealing with that kind of feeling when it comes is, because I find, I don't know about you, but I find this, that if there's someone that I'm not having good dealings with, or these kind of feelings are there, they're usually the first people I think of when I start my japa in the morning. They usually come up in my mind first thing in the morning. So it's an indication that there's some work to be done in the day. So if we start by when these people come up in our minds, if we pay our obeisances in our mind, we pay obeisances to them. And then when we are taking darshan of the deities, we pray for them. So Prabhupada was very expert in always seeing, he was very practical, that when there was some, like someone asked him about, he wouldn't pay his obeisances, and Prabhupada said, why are you not paying your obeisances? He said, I'm not going to do something artificially. When I feel humble, I'll do it. So Prabhupada said, you become humble, the feeling of humility will come by paying your obeisances. So in the same way, when we have these negativities, if we do the opposite, if we do the positive thing, then we'll start to take that on more as our mindset rather than the negative. And that can be, I found that very, very helpful. That, you know, when people come in your mind and a critical thought is attached to it, immediately just check yourself, pay your obeisances to the person, think of some good quality they have, pray for them at Mangalati or at Darshanati or whatever time of day it happens. Like that. It's something I've found useful. Has anybody else got any ideas? Ananda. It's very true that there are subtle beings that can create disturbance, but it's also true that they can only create disturbance where we have openings for them to do it. For example, with ghosts and things like that, if there's uncleanliness of the body, instability of mind, these kind of things, anger like creates holes in the aura. So when there's that kind of thing, then it can do like that. Yeah. But those holes are there in the aura. They come from negative emotion. And like that. So if the best way to conquer this kind of thing is to be very Krishna conscious. And if we can't be always terribly Krishna conscious, then if we can be at least positive in our thinking. Because if you look at, there are sort of photos taken of different auras with different emotions and things like that, and it's very fascinating that if someone has qualities of mode of goodness, then you don't get the holes and things like that. They come with very passionate and ignorant type qualities and emotions. But I think we also have to be very, very careful
that we don't use the existence of other living entities in subtle form to put our problem on somebody else's shoulders. That, you know, we have to be very, very careful that we look at reality as it is. That these kind of entities can only touch us when we have weaknesses. So if we're seeing ourselves and looking at our weaknesses and overcoming them, that's probably the best way. Rather than thinking in terms of them and we, rather than that, we just look at our own weaknesses and try and deal with them. We don't really have a lot of time, but we'll just have a bit of fun with one that's very common. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. Anybody like some quick feedback? Give some quick feedback on this one. How do we deal with this one? I'm perfect, I'm powerful, and I'm happy. I mean, it's always good to stub your toe. It sort of puts you in perspective on all three. But any thoughts on how to deal with this one? It is impermanent, but when we feel it, we think it's going to last forever. Isn't it? Interesting is that when we do feel like this, it's usually we're on a high. That's true. So if we can use that energy productively, you know, like turn it around and use it productively in some way, where we don't actually become an enjoyer of the energy, but we utilize it to do something productive. That might be one way of looking at it. Any other thoughts on that one? Yeah. Yeah. On the other hand, I think that one of our problems, and it has led to mediocrity and lack of enthusiasm in the movement, is that on the other hand, I don't think we should deny that we can be powerful and we can attain perfection and we can attain happiness. So I remember one of the most common things that Hare Keswami used to say to me is, get out of the way. Get out of the way. Let Krishna work through you. Get out of the way. And when you manage to do that, I mean, it's just an almighty high, you know. So there's nothing wrong with being all-powerful, all-perfect and happy. If you're remembering that you're, you know, it's because you're opening up, your heart is opening up as an instrument of He who is all-powerful, all-happy and perfect, you know. Because if we deny ourselves these qualities, isn't that called mediocrity? You know, so we don't want to deny ourselves these qualities. We want to deny ourselves misidentification with them. So if we think, I am Krishna's aspiring servant, I'm going to get out of the way, I'm going to let him use me. That's basically what Prabhupada did. That's what all, you know, pure devotees do. They basically get out of the way so Krishna can work through them. And then they are able to do amazing things. You know, they the way that they appear to do everything perfectly, and they are always blissful. So I, you know, for this one, I sort of feel we should not give up on the idea that we can be, but we should have. What's that? Maybe you can bring it tomorrow. Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, yeah. Basically, it's very prominent in the Gita. Is give up doership. You know, the whole thing with Arjuna, his whole problem was he got in the way. Get out of the way. You know, I'm going to kill 640 million men. How's that for being very powerful? You know, and you're going to be the instrument, you know. So just be an instrument. Spoons don't talk. Spoons don't, you know, just be a spoon. You're in my hand. Shut up and let me do the work, you know. It's like that. So, yeah, I'd like to go on with this if we get time tomorrow. We'll have to stop now, unfortunately. Please set my way.